Caitlin, my own confusion and aimlessness. All of the things that had remained unspoken between us for too long. It was easier to focus on Mia and Lottie. I'm afraid to leave her here, I said, my voice low.
Who? Your sister?
Yes, I nodded. But also Mia.
Why?
He asked carefully. Because I'm afraid of what Lottie might do. Mark was quiet for a moment.
Is she abusive?
No, I said quickly.
Neglectful?
No.
Then what?
He asked. It's not what she is now. It's what she might become. It's what she might be capable of doing later. I tried to explain. Mark reached for my hand and held it a moment before he spoke.
Francie, there's not really anything we can do about that right now.
The reality of his words was both a shock and a relief. Of course, he was right. I couldn't take Mia from Lottie. I couldn't go to social services. Even if there was something that they could do, which I doubted at this point, I'd never be able to bring myself to take Lottie's baby from her. After what she had done for me, the secret she'd carried like a hot coal in her pocket, how could I take anything from her? Yet even while I knew this, I wondered if Mia would hate me for this moment years from now, or if I would hate myself for what I couldn't do to Lottie. Lottie. Since Mark arrived with the girls that afternoon, I'd found it difficult to leave the bedroom. Seeing Francie's family with the only member of my tiny and truncated family made me aware of all that I didn't have, that I couldn't have. It made me want to hide. I'd been watching old movies in bed, high school romances from the 80s, 16 Candles and Some Kind of Wonderful, wishing my own life were so simple that my only worry was if the boy I liked would ask me to prom. Francie came in during the opening credits of Pretty in Pink. Hey. She hovered in the doorway anxiously. Hey. I returned my eyes to the television screen. Molly Ringwald was applying pink lip gloss and putting on stockings to the music of the Psychedelic Furs. God, I haven't seen this in ages, she said, coming to sit beside me on the bed. I own it. I watch it at least once a year. I love this movie. I sighed. Back then, I'd wanted to be Molly Ringwald. The movie was a staple at sleepovers, and I'd started making my own clothing after seeing it for the first time, developing an affinity for weird, floppy hats. Francie lay down beside me on the bed. Where is everyone? I asked after a while. Mia's taking a nap. Mark and the girls are back at the hotel. They're going to come back for dinner around 6. The day had seemed impossibly long. It was hard to believe that just this morning we'd visited our father. And life went on. I felt sick with the knowledge that Francie now knew the truth about Mother. All that time I'd kept it from her. All the time I'd carried the weight of it alone, to tell her now. What a waste. Do you want them to leave, Mark and the girls? Francie asked after a moment. It's fine, I lied. He should have told me before he came. He should have let me know so I could ask you first. Francie wrinkled her brow and flopped back against the pillow. But I haven't been very good at communicating with him lately. I think he was getting worried. It's fine, Francie. He cares about you. We were quiet for a moment, watching the screen, though I doubted that either of us was paying much attention to the plot. We're going to have to start talking about what happens next, Francie finally said. I didn't answer, pretending to be absorbed in the unfolding high school drama. Mark talked with Sally before he left. They've figured out a schedule so that she can drop Mia off and pick her up at daycare every day. He doesn't waste any time, does he? I asked.
He's just trying to help, Francie said.
That just leaves the Knights to figure out. Is there anyone else who might be able to help you out? Any co-workers or friends? I shook my head.
No one that I could ask to do this.
I can stay for another week, maybe two, but that's about it.
Why? I asked selfishly.
Even now, nearly 6 years after Francie's beautiful daughters had come along, I couldn't gracefully accept no longer being first in her life.
Because I have to go home, Lottie. I need to take care of my family.
Why can't Mark?
Because he can't, she said in exasperation. Not alone. He works long hours, and he's not able to pick the girls up at school. He's got his mom doing as much as she can, but she's in her 70s.
Francie paused.
And I miss them, Lottie. I want to go home to be with them.
I swallowed the lump that was forming in my throat.
We'll be fine, I told her, forcing myself to smile.
2 weeks from now, I'm sure I'll be walking almost normally. And I only need one arm to hold Mia, right? I was half joking, half serious.
Francie shook her head.
Lottie, you're going to need some help. If it were just you, that'd be one thing. But how are you going to take care of a baby with only one arm? It's not safe.
Well, I guess I'm just going to have to, aren't I? I snapped. I'll figure it out.
There's one other possibility.
There was something tentative in the way she spoke.
What's that?
You and Mia could come home with us. I can help take care of her until you're better.
She looked so hopeful, her eyes pleading with me not to make this any harder than it had to be.
Just for a few weeks, a month or two, tops.
Come on, Francie. Mia and I can't go home with you, I said. What about my job?
You'll take a leave of absence. You're injured, Lottie. It's not as if you'll be going in next week anyway.
What about Dad? I visit him each week.
Francie's face clouded over, and I knew she was remembering our visit.
He doesn't even know who you are.
I'm sorry, but he's not going to notice if you don't come for a few weeks.
She reached up to brush the hair from my face and let her hand rest on my cheek.
Please, Lottie. It's the only thing that makes any sense.
Have you talked with Mark about this? I asked.
She dropped her hand and looked away.
No, but it will be fine. He wants me to come home, so this is the only way that I'll be able to.
Somehow I doubted it would be that simple, but Francie looked so desperate that I couldn't say no.
I'll think about it.
Okay, she said,
satisfied for the moment.
She pulled the comforter up over us, and we watched the film.
Francie. Mark made spaghetti bolognese for dinner. It was an awkward meal, without a dining room or dining room table, and Mark, the girls, and I sat on the floor around the coffee table. Lottie, on the couch, unsteadily balanced the plate on her lap, and Mia sat in her infant seat on the floor. We were a precarious, botched-together family, but we didn't talk about anything too serious and managed to get through the meal. After dinner, Mark and I cleaned up the kitchen while the girls watched a movie, and Lottie took Mia into her room to nurse. She'd grown surprisingly adept at carrying the baby with only one working arm, and before dinner, I watched her change Mia's diaper with only one hand. I knew this was the beginning of her campaign for me to leave the two of them here alone, but I couldn't yet steel myself for that fight.
Let's go sit outside for a few minutes, I said to Mark as I put the last pot away.
I opened the door that led to Lottie's patio. It was a small city backyard, unlike our own spacious backyard in Brookline, but the plants that grew were exotic by New England standards. There was a fairy duster shrub with red flowers that looked like paintbrushes. Near the house, white and green calla lilies sprouted, and in the corner of the yard, a palm tree grew. Lottie had wound a string of Christmas lights around the thick trunk of the tree, and when I plugged them in, the yard was cast in a pale golden glow. We sat down in plastic lawn chairs. The air smelled like eucalyptus leaves.
"How are you holding up?" Mark asked.
I sighed and breathed in the pungent air. "My mother killed herself." I hadn't planned to tell him like this, but the words came out anyway. The revelation had hovered around the edge of everything else all day, my mother's choice brushing up against Lottie's determination to shield me from it. How alone she must have felt, intent on protecting me and our father, yet forced to face the brutal possibility of her own future.
"What?"
Mark sat forward in his chair.
"What do you mean?"
"I found out today, when we went to visit my father. He said something, and I asked Lottie about it. She's known all along, but didn't tell me. To protect me." I thought of every secret and confidence I'd shared with Lottie over the years, my whole life laid bare before her. I wondered if I'd ever known my sister at all. What other hidden pockets of darkness had she kept from me? A tear rolled down my face, but I didn't wipe it away. "She hung herself, and Lottie found her. She never told anyone. Not me, not our father. She kept it a secret." I imagined the secret like a stain that spread until it could not be contained.
"Jesus," Mark whispered. "You told me she'd been depressed, but I didn't realize."
"Me either. I didn't understand how bad it really was. After she died, I didn't want to think about it. She used to disappear into her bedroom for weeks on end. Like Lottie, but different."
"You hardly ever talk about her."
It was true, yet I thought about her all the time. "It's hard to talk about her. After she died, I tried not to think about those times. I wanted to believe she was happy." I got up from my own chair and sat down on his lap, leaning into his chest. My cheek scratched against a day's worth of stubble on his chin, and I thought about Wit, the kiss we'd shared, the feeling of his hands on my body. My eyes filled again with regret. I imagined telling him now. How would the sentence begin? "I betrayed you. I may have destroyed everything. I'm so sorry." Such flimsy words. We built our lives around people and dreams. We lived inside of them as if they were houses. Strong buildings of brick and mortar, wood and nails, as if they were solid and unbreakable. We believed these houses could weather all sorts of storms, and so we neglected them. We waited to reshingle. We forgot to clean the gutters. We let the roof go too long. But really, I suddenly understood, our lives were not houses. These fragile shelters were more like teepees, potentially temporary and capable of crashing down on the occupants if one stick snapped or if one branch fell out of place. What arrogance to treat them as if they were incapable of destruction. If I told him, our life together might very well be over. He might leave me. He might leave the girls. Or he might try to take them with him. Already I could feel the absence of my family and our life together as a hollow pain inside of me.
I was ashamed that I'd needed to come this close to realize how desperately I wanted everything inside this fragile shelter that we'd created together. So I didn't say anything. I swallowed my words back down and felt his arms around me. But when he spoke next, I knew he'd been thinking about our relationship too.
"Do you love me?"
he asked.
"Yes, so much."
I reached around to hold his face in my hands.
"Then that's what's important."
He reached up and took my hands in his.
"Right here, you and I, this is what's important."
He gestured with his chin toward Lottie's house.
"Inside that house, all of those people that we love, that's what's important."
"I know,"
I whispered.
"We need to find our way back to that, Francie."
"I know,"
I said, chastened.
"What's happened with you and your sister this past year has been hard on you,"
he continued. I looked down at my lap.
"I'm sorry that it's been so hard. And I'm sorry that I made it harder."
I was silent. It still hurt. All of those times he'd convinced me not to call her back. The times he gently yet firmly said he didn't want the girls having anything to do with her. All the times I'd reached for the phone to call her, only to think about what Mark would say.
"The girls come first," Mark said to me now. "I know you know that. I know you understand that, Francie."
"Of course I do,"
I said, feeling a rush of anger. I'd known that the moment I walked into the bathroom and saw blood all over Anna's face. I'd known it the moment they were born and I held them in my arms for the first time. I didn't need him to remind me.
"But she's my sister, Mark, my twin. I don't know how to live without her."
He nodded.
"And I won't ask you to again. But they need to come before her. Always."
"I know,"
I whispered.
"I know."
The lights from the palm tree illuminated his face, and I saw the small lines around his mouth and eyes. My husband would be 40 this year.
"Francie,"
he said, and his voice was stern.
"No matter what happens with your sister, here or in Boston,"
he seemed to struggle to find the words.
"You can't blame me for it."
"I won't."
But I did. All this time, Lottie and I hadn't spoken. It was easier to hold it against Mark than to accept that I'd cut her out of my life because I needed to.
"No, Francie, I'm serious."
He pulled me up so that again I was looking into his eyes.
"Whatever happens over the next few months or years with your sister, it's not my fault. You can't blame me for it. If you do, we'll never survive it."
He didn't tell me what he foresaw. A quiet phone call to social services, a custody battle, my sister's rage and manipulation raining down on all of us, or something smaller, less significant. The distance between me and Lottie growing wider until it was an unpassable gulf. It was quiet, waiting to make sure I understood. I was sickened by how close I'd come to losing him this past year, and then, more pointedly, just the other night. My breath caught in my throat as I swallowed back tears, nodding.
"I won't. I won't blame you, Mark. I promise I won't."
He pulled me to him, and I let myself relax for what felt like the first time in months. Inside, I heard Mia's crying and realized that she'd been at it for a while. In a moment, I'd have to go up and help Lottie. I heard her calling me, but I couldn't bring myself to rise just yet. I leaned into Mark, inhaling my husband's warm, familiar smell. He held me steady in his arms, and we stared at the palm tree covered in Christmas lights in February in my crazy sister's tiny backyard. Inside the house, all of the drama of our family waited.
But for a few moments, we had found a tentative peace.
Lottie. The cry of an infant has the power to drive a person insane. This was one of the first things I learned after becoming a mother. Mia had many different cries, each one subtly unique. One was reserved for hunger. It was insistent and immediate and could be quickly silenced. Another was a cry for comfort. This one started off as a whimper and then built into jagged sobs if I didn't get to her fast enough. And then there was the one I had come to call the cry of insanity. It was not a cry with any purpose, as far as I could tell. Rarely was hunger or discomfort involved. Instead, it was an endless cry that had no purpose and no destination. It left me feeling useless and inept and on the verge of tears myself. It would end as suddenly as it began, and in its place I would find my cheerful baby girl while I was left depleted and exhausted. After dinner, I brought Mia into the bedroom to nurse and get ready for bed. My milk was slowly drying up. While in the hospital, my breasts were sore and leaked the first day. But by the time I came home, my milk was slowing down, not coming as fast and not lasting as long. The doctor had said that if I kept nursing, it would return to its regular amount. But it was so hard to nurse with the cast, so uncomfortable and awkward that I'd been letting Francie prepare bottles. But when Francie's family descended upon us, I wanted Mia back, all to myself. Mine, mine, mine. I brought Mia into the bedroom with the intention of nursing, but she'd quickly grown frustrated. With the frustration descended the cry of insanity. A shrill and breathless sob that turned her tiny face red, her mouth stretched wide as she expelled her misery. I tried to comfort her, singing, rocking her, and cooing in her ear. Nothing worked. I hobbled around the bedroom, holding her to my body with my one good arm while trying to sway side to side. Mia continued to howl, and I felt the panic rising up. The dread that always came with this cry. Francie! I finally called out of desperation. My sister had been so attentive over the past few days that I was surprised she hadn't come at the first sounds of Mia crying. But she didn't come even now. Francie! Mark! I called again. I thumped down the hallway and into the living room. Anna and Autumn were on the couch in the dark, the blue light of the television flickering on their faces. At the sound of Mia's crying, they looked up. "Where are your parents?" I asked. My arm ached with fatigue, but there was nothing I could do about it. Mia continued to squall against my chest.
"I don't know. What's wrong with Mia?" Autumn asked.
"Sometimes babies just cry. You don't know where your mom is?" They shook their heads, returning to the television screen. I hobbled into the kitchen, which was all clean and organized thanks to Francie. I'd make Mia a bottle, and that would calm her, I decided. But I hadn't fully thought about how I could do this with only one arm. I had only the use of the fingers of my right hand, and the can of formula was on the top shelf, along with the bottles. I'd have to put Mia down in order to make the bottle. I returned to her bedroom and awkwardly plunked her into the bed. Her cries grew louder and more desperate.
"I'll be right back, sweetie," I said, though Mia just looked up at me through wet lashes and shining eyes, as if I'd betrayed her yet again.
Back in the kitchen, I pulled down the bottle of formula, mixing everything together quickly, shaking the bottle, cursing under my breath. By the time I got back to Mia's bedroom, her face was the deep red of a cooked lobster. My back and neck and arm muscles all screamed out at me as I bent into the crib and scooped Mia up with only one arm, her head flopping awkwardly. It wasn't until I'd stood up with her that I realized I'd left the bottle on the kitchen counter.
"Shit,"
I hissed.
"Where the hell was Francie?"
I could put Mia back in the bed, but then I'd have to maneuver to pick her up again, and I didn't think my arm could stand another jostling.
Anna! Autumn! I called.
Neither girl answered, too drugged out by the lure of Disney to come to my rescue.
God damn it, Francie!
I cursed. Because somehow it was easier to direct my anger at Francie than at myself or this untenable situation. I began the long walk back to the kitchen, Mia draped against my chest. She continued to howl, ear-splitting, mind-numbing, hair-tearing cries, and I felt the rage and fear and frustration all boiling up inside of me.
Calm down, Mia, just calm down, I snapped.
Mia began sliding down my body, and I struggled to redistribute her weight, hoisting her back up clumsily. While the kitchen was neat and tidy, the rest of the house was not, having already been monopolized by Anna and Autumn's toys. With my eyes on Mia's slipping frame, I took my attention away from what was in front of me, and my socked foot slipped on a stuffed penguin. Before I knew it, I was falling, though I had enough time to clutch Mia even tighter. Even so, we both let out a cry when we landed with a thump. My good shoulder bounced off the hardwood floor just inches from Mia's head. Pain shot through every corner of my body, ricocheting through my arm, foot, and head with a force that made me cry out. The back door that led to the patio slammed shut. When I looked up from the floor, both Francie and Mark stood over me, Anna and Autumn hovering a few feet behind.
"Oh my God, Lottie, are you okay? Is Mia okay? What just happened?"
Francie crouched beside me.
"Where the hell were you?"
I yelled at her, tears suddenly appearing now that my sister was here.
"I called you. I needed help getting Mia's bottle."
"We were outside. I'm sorry. I didn't hear you." She reached toward Mia, who continued to cry.
"Is she okay? Did she hit the floor?"
Though my whole body was screaming with pain and fatigue, I didn't want to let go of Mia. No, I held on to her. She was already crying. She just won't stop. "Her bottle's in the kitchen." I wanted to close my eyes and press my cheek against the cool hardwood floor, but I held Mia instead, struggling to keep my body upright.
"Lottie, let me take her. Let me help you," Francie said, reaching for Mia again.
"No!" I shrieked, holding Mia tighter.
"You can't take her! You can't take her!"
Francie cringed and leaned back, loosening her grip on Mia.
"Okay. It's okay, sweetie. No one's going to take her."
She turned to where the rest of her family stood, watching me unravel. Anna and Autumn were looking at me with fear, the same way they had looked at me that night in the bathroom. Mark stood frozen in place, observing me with a calculating wariness. In that moment, I hated them all even more than I hated myself. Only Francie sat beside me on the floor, trying to share the weight of Mia without taking her out of my arms.
"Mark, go get the bottle,"
Francie calmly instructed. It took him a moment to process the direction, but then he went into the kitchen. He returned with the bottle, his arm extended to Francie, as if I were contagious and he'd risk catching whatever strain of crazy I had if he came in physical contact with me. Francie brought the bottle to Mia's lips, and she began to suck away hungrily. With the sucking, the crying stopped, and the apartment was filled with a blissful silence. I let out a deep breath and let my head rest against Francie's shoulder.
"Mark, it's late. You should get back to the hotel, okay?
Girls, go get your things together," Francie said. I watched a look pass between Francie and her husband. There was so much in that look. It said, "Trust me." It said, "I can't talk now, but I'll call you later." It said, "I told you, this is a bigger mess than you realized." I turned away from them so I wouldn't have to see what else they were saying about me without even uttering a word. I looked down at Mia instead. Her eyes had drifted closed, and her lids were pale petals. She drank milk that came from a can instead of my breast, brought to her by her aunt instead of me. Yet she was finally content.
Francie. What are we going to do, Mark?
I said into the phone. Though I was sitting on the front steps of Lottie's building, I was still whispering. Mark had taken the girls back to the hotel. Inside, Lottie was getting ready for bed while Mia had fallen into a heavy sleep after the drama in the hallway.
Mia needs to come home with us until your sister can take care of her, he said, matter-of-factly, as if taking my sister's daughter away from her was the simplest thing in the world.
And how exactly do we do that? I asked, the exasperation already creeping into my voice. Did you see what happened tonight when I tried to take Mia away from her for a minute, just to feed her a bottle? How am I supposed to take her across the country?
I brought the heel of my hand up to my eyes, rubbing the tears and exhaustion from them. I focused on the step in front of me where raindrops had begun to fall. From the glow of the streetlight, I watched the white cement of the step as it became speckled with dark spots.
Lottie will come too. His voice was calm and firm.
But there's no debate about whether your sister is capable of caring for Mia at the moment. I think that was pretty clear tonight, don't you?
I was silent.
Francie, we don't have a choice.
It's not our place to decide if she's a good mother, I said weakly.
Francie.
He sounded sad, disappointed.
Of course it is. Mia's our niece.
On the other end of the phone, I heard the sound of the television, and I wondered if the girls were still awake. It was well past their bedtime.
I'll tell her. That way she'll blame me, not you. Right now, we're only talking about taking her while Lottie recovers from her physical injuries. But with or without Lottie, that baby is coming home with us.
Mark's words hung between us as I clutched the phone to my ear. The step filled with more dark spots, the rain coming faster now. The cool drops landed on the back of my neck, in my hair, on my hands. I tilted my head back, letting the rain lightly tap my face. The calm before the storm, I thought to myself. Lottie. It rained all night. The noise of the storm broken by flashes of lightning that brightened the sky with a silent yet ominous force only to be followed by a clap of thunder. Miraculously, Mia slept through it all, though both Francie and I tossed all night. Though we'd shared crowded spaces many times before, neither of us could get comfortable. When Mia woke in the early hours of the morning, the storm had ended, and Francie brought her into the bed. Mia drifted off to sleep with the bottle in her mouth, cocooned between us. She slept deeply, hardly stirring at all, and we both curled up close, flanking her like sentries. With her eyes closed, Francie looked like a child, a grown-up version of my own daughter. I imagined a life where it was just the three of us, Francie and me raising Mia together. We would offer the best of our own mother without the pain. We'd create our own Mirabella and Louisa Strout stories, but they wouldn't be dark. We'd fill them with fairies and flowers, magic and pixie dust, all of the things that our mother had left out.
Once, in a place that is not here, and now, but is very close, once there lived two girls, I whispered into Mia's ear.
Though I'd thought Francie was asleep, I suddenly sensed her waiting for me to tell the story. And though moments earlier I'd thought of sprites and rainbows, I couldn't continue. Any story I told would have feral cats and homeless strangers, beady-eyed rats and frigid winter nights. The darkness was always there, like it or not. I turned my head away and waited for morning. Francie. Mark arrived before 9, bearing breakfast. I was still in my pajamas and carried Mia in the sling, and when I answered the door, Mark and the girls were standing on the landing. Anna held a paper bag, and Autumn was carefully balancing a cardboard drink caddy with paper cups. "Good morning," I said, patting each of my daughters and opening the door for them to come inside.
"We brought breakfast. Bagels and cream cheese. And hot chocolate," Anna said.
"And coffee for the grown-ups," Mark added.
He came to stand beside me and peered down at Mia. She blinked back up at him. "Bring the food into the kitchen," I told Anna and Autumn. Turning to Mark, I said, "I wasn't expecting you so early."
"Well, we have to talk to Lottie."
"Now? So soon?"
"It's not going to be any easier if we wait."
He looked down at Mia again.
"How's she doing?"
"She's fine." He reached his hand into the sling. Mia grabbed his finger and held on tight. "Could you love her?" I spoke quietly so Lottie wouldn't hear. He met my eyes, though Mia still clutched his finger. "If you had to? If she ended up staying for longer? If, for some reason, we ended up raising her?" The various permutations of the "some reason" sickened me, and I couldn't dwell on any of them, but I needed to hear the answer.
"Yes," Mark said. "Without a doubt, yes."
I wished his answer brought more comfort, but I knew it was the most I could hope for. From the other room, Anna let out a yell when she burned her tongue on the hot chocolate, and Lottie comforted her, urging her to take the lid off and let it cool down.
"Come have some breakfast," Mark said,
and we joined the rest of the family on pillows on the floor. Lottie. Assaults come in different colors and different shades. I was armed and ready for Francie. What I didn't expect was Mark. We'd finished breakfast, and the plates were empty on the coffee table, except for a few smears of cream cheese and sprinkles of poppy seeds. It was a choreographed attack in its delivery. Francie and the girls suddenly busy stacking plates and washing dishes in the kitchen, leaving just Mark and me together. We'd never spent much time alone. Whether out of mutual avoidance or because of Francie's careful planning, I wasn't quite sure.
"I'd like to discuss something with you, Charlotte," Mark said.
He was a businessman through and through, direct and calculating, a careful weigher of pros and cons. Though I wore pajamas and lay on a velour couch in the comfort of my own living room, my body tensed immediately. I sat up, not wanting to lie down for whatever this conversation would bring.
"Go ahead."
I picked up my lukewarm coffee cup from the table, only to have something to do with my good hand.
"I know it's going to be a little bit of time before you recover from this accident. Francie and I would like to help."
He leaned forward in his chair, elbows on his knees, his hands clasped together. "Mia and I are fine," I told him. He was a good-looking man, I noticed, not for the first time. His dark hair was becoming lightly flecked with gray, but he would become distinguished-looking as he got older. He was trim and in good shape, and I wondered if he worked out every night before coming home to Francie and the girls. Or maybe he was the type who packed a gym bag and exercised during his lunch hour.
"Last night, you seemed
pretty rattled. Taking care of a baby on your own is hard, even when you've got full use of both legs and arms. And a clean and working mind was certainly what he wanted to add, but didn't.
I think I'm just a little overwhelmed with so many people around, I told him. I'm used to it just being me and Mia. This is a small apartment.
I smiled sweetly at Mark, determined not to let him get under my skin.
It might take us a few days, but I'll figure out how to do it. Mia and I are just fine.
You're not, Charlotte. Clearly, you're not.
He held my gaze to show me that he wasn't backing down. Where are you going with this, Mark? I asked, dropping the niceties.
Francie and I would like you and Mia to come back to Boston with us. We've got plenty of room. Mia can sleep with you, or she can have her own room. We can help take care of her until you get better.
But I'm never going to get better, I said bitterly.
Francie said that you'll have full use of your leg within the next 6 weeks, Mark said. 6 weeks is not that long a time to come and stay with us. You might enjoy yourself.
I'm talking about my mental health, Mark. And I know you and Francie are too. So let's drop the bullshit. You're not going to ask me if I'd like to come for a little visit. You're telling me you're going to take my child whether I want to come or not. Am I right?
I was sweating lightly, and my nerves jangled inside my skin. You're right.
He let out a sigh.
Francie might want to cross her fingers and hope that you and Mia are just fine, but I can't. I can't put that child in jeopardy because I don't want to hurt your feelings.
But you're not really talking about 6 weeks, are you? I asked. You're talking about permanently. You don't think I can be a good mother.
Jesus, Charlotte, this isn't about that, Mark said, standing up and walking to the window.
He stood with his back to me and stared through the sheer white curtains, running a hand through his hair.
Maybe it is for Francie, but it's not for me.
He turned to face me, his arms crossed against his chest.
What I'm talking about right now is leaving that baby with you when you can't even make a goddamn bottle by yourself. And maybe you've convinced Francie, and even yourself, that you'll be able to get by, but I'd have to be pretty callous to stand by and let myself be convinced of it too.
He came back to the chair and sat down again. I was clutching the cup so tightly that the paper had started to collapse on itself.
So here's the deal, he continued. I've booked tickets for this weekend. One of them will have your name on it. You can think about it, but either way, Mia is coming home with us. There doesn't seem to be any other realistic options. I hated him in that moment. So smug and certain of himself. How easy for him to judge me when he was married to Francie. She might have been scared of her own shadow, but everything looked perfect from the outside, and that was all that mattered to Mark. It could just as easily have been Francie, I wanted to tell him. It was only luck that allowed Francie to care for her daughters without worrying that her mind might deceive her. It's only luck that you married the right twin. The kitchen had gone silent. The girls were in Mia's bedroom with Francie. They were singing a song about the moon and a meatball.
What am I supposed to do about work? I asked.
Take a leave of absence. I'm sure you're covered by disability for the next 6 weeks.
And after the 6 weeks, I asked,
you and Mia come home.
I don't believe you. My eyes filled, and I pursed my lips to keep the tears from falling. You'll try to take Mia from me.
Mark shook his head. I'm not trying to take her from you. This is the only practical solution.
He lifted his empty hands.
Francie needs to come home. We need her. But you still need help.
I tried to imagine the next 6 weeks. I'd only been to Francie's house once before, but I knew that it was large and beautiful, tastefully decorated like something from a magazine.
There were two extra bedrooms connected by a bathroom, and there was a large yard with a swing set outside, though in February it would be covered in snow. With the girls at school and Mark at work, it would be just me and Francie and Mia. How long would it be before we started to drive each other crazy? How long before Francie started counting the pills in my toilet kit? How long before she started scrutinizing all of my interactions with Mia? But what were my options? To not go meant to lose Mia for certain. To fight Francie and Mark also meant losing. And a tiny, resentful part of me knew that the two of us had been hanging on by a thread before the accident. What would become of us now? The flight wouldn't be till the weekend. That gave me several days to figure out a plan. If I could come up with one, I'd get on a plane with them. Okay, I told Mark. Okay? Okay, we'll come with you. Mark nodded, clearly surprised that I had acquiesced so easily. Great. That's great. We can tell Francie. I nodded. When do we leave? Saturday. Today's Wednesday? Mark nodded. I figured while we were here, we could do a little sightseeing. I've only been to California once before, he said sheepishly. I've always wanted to walk across the Golden Gate Bridge. I forced myself to smile at him. It's beautiful. You should visit more often. We should, Mark said with a chuckle. He pushed himself up. I'm glad you're coming, Charlotte, he said, extending his hand to me. I reached out, tentatively, and he squeezed it gently. It will be okay. I nodded, letting my hand fall to my lap as he went to tell Francie. I lay back down on the couch, under an orange blanket. I pulled it up and over my eyes, inhaling the musty smell of the wool. Under the blanket, all I could see was the dark glow of the world outside. Francie. Anna and Autumn hovered beside me while I prepared to change Mia's diaper.
Look at her little toes, Anna said,
catching the baby's foot. Autumn stood on tiptoes beside me.
Can I put the diaper on?
You can help, I told her.
Me too,
Anna squealed. They helped pick out an outfit for Mia, and the girls were tugging on a pair of yellow socks when Mark came into the bedroom. The girls are helping me change Mia. I see that. Nice work. Did you talk to her? I asked, lowering my voice slightly. He nodded.
They're going to come.
I raised my eyebrows in surprise. Just like that? Mark shrugged.
What can I say? I must be pretty persuasive.
I lifted Mia from the table and brought her to the rug on the floor, laying her down on her back.
Can you guys play with her down here for a minute? I need to talk to Daddy.
I brought a collection of toys to the rug and went to stand beside Mark in the doorway.
She just agreed to come? What did you say to her?
I don't know, he said vaguely. I just told her we'd help her.
Things were never simple with Lottie. She would trap me later and try to convince me to help change Mark's mind. She'd throw a teary tantrum in the airport. She'd disappear with Mia the morning of the flight. Hold on, Mark. Tell me exactly what you said to her.
Francie, what does it matter? She said she would come with Mia. She asked when we were leaving.
I don't buy it, I said, shaking my head.
It's going to be okay, Mark said, slipping his arm around my waist. I told her that you needed to come home, but that we knew she needed help while she was recovering. I don't know what else to say, he shrugged. She seemed to get it.
I frowned, still skeptical. Is she mad?
I don't think so. She really seemed okay with it.
I nodded, and we watched the three girls together on the floor.
God, you guys are going to be at each other's throats within a week, I said after a moment.
Hey, you never know, Mark said with a smile. I'm not positive, but I think your sister and I might have just come to a little truce.
Huh, I said. Now if only we could. He kissed me lightly on the cheek.
I was thinking we could play tourist for the next few days. See the sights? Pretend we're on a regular vacation?
A vacation? This is hardly a vacation, I said.
I know, but we're here. We might as well make the most of it.
What do you want to do? I asked.
Get in the car and drive. I want to see the Golden Gate Bridge.
He brought my fingers to his mouth, kissed my forefinger lightly.
I'd like to be shown around by a native.
What about Mia? I asked.
She could come. Or we could see if Sally is free to babysit for a few hours.
Yeah, I guess we could, I said reluctantly.
We can give your sister a little break from us all.
Besides, we're going to have a full house for a while, Mark said. We should try to enjoy a little time, just the four of us.
Why are we going to have a full house? Autumn asked.
From the way she had pushed herself up onto her knees, I could tell she'd been listening to us for the past few minutes. Mark looked at me.
Because your Aunt Lottie and Mia are going to come stay with us in Boston for a few weeks. Does that sound like fun?
Yeah! Both girls cheered in unison. Mia will be like our little sister, Anna said.
Well, she's your cousin, honey, I said.
But we can pretend, right?
Anna asked. I suppose so, yeah, I said uneasily.
Come here, little sister,
Autumn crooned into Mia's ear, flopping down on the rug beside the baby. I felt my skin go cold and turned away from them. I'm going to go take a shower. Will you guys be okay in here?
Sure, Mark said.
In the bathroom, I stripped off my pajamas and stood under the scalding water. My heart was beating fast. But the quiet of the steamy bathroom began to calm me. I took my time washing my hair. I shaved my legs with Lottie's razor and used her expensive bath scrub. I washed and conditioned my hair a second time because I wasn't ready to get out of the shower. Wasn't ready to face whatever lay outside these warm walls. Mark and the girls had already opened their hearts to Mia, and while that should have made me happy, it scared me. The stronger their love, the harder it would be to hand Mia over to Lottie once she was better. The more we loved her, the more Lottie would retreat. All of us boarding a plane together in a few days and playing happy family, it couldn't be this simple. Nothing with Lottie ever was. I lay down in the large clawfoot tub with the water from the shower still running. I closed my eyes, letting the pinpricks of water cover me from head to toe. Lottie. The house was silent. Francie and Mark had taken the girls into San Francisco for the day. Sally had brought Mia to her daycare, armed with a large box of diapers and a new can of formula. I'd promised Francie that I'd call the head of the English department to negotiate a leave of absence. Before she left, Francie helped me get settled on the couch, and I was surrounded by magazines, books, snacks, my laptop, my cell phone, and the remote control. All at easy access. I tried to read. I tried to watch television. I checked my email. But I couldn't stifle the anxiety that clutched me by the neck. If I had full use of my body, I would have gone for a walk or a bike ride. But instead, I was stuck in a body that felt as if it were moving through mud. Every step an effort. Every movement slow and painful. I looked around the living room. It was my favorite room in the apartment. Light and airy with a working fireplace. Though I'd lived in the apartment since graduating college, I had decorated the living room only a few years earlier. throwing out much of the cheap second-hand furniture and replacing it with what I considered grown-up furniture. The year I was decorating the room, I scavenged flea markets and small boutiques for artwork and handmade crafts. I was happy with the result. It looked like it belonged to me. There were only two photographs in the room, on the end table beside the couch. One of me and Francie, and one of our mother. I'd seen Francie examine the picture of our mother just the day before, running her thumb along the smooth glass. It was a photo taken in the sunlit study of our house in Palo Alto. Mother looked to be in her early 30s, which would have meant that Francie and I were only toddlers. She sat cross-legged on a wooden bench, barefoot in black leggings and a pale pink leotard. Her hair pulled into a loose bun. She had stopped dancing when Francie and I were born, but she continued to do her exercises every day, stretching and bending and plieing in the study. The gentle tapping of her feet against the wood floor could be heard many weekend afternoons. It was nearly unfathomable to me that she had died 20 years ago. Though I'd grown used to her absence, I still felt it every day. I wondered how things might have been different if she had never died. She would have been here for Mia's birth. She'd be the one taking care of us now. She'd be a doting grandmother to all three of her granddaughters. Francie might even still be living in California. We could have talked. Though I didn't think that Mother had experienced the highs of the white, she certainly was familiar with the black, and I wondered if it was similar to my own dark room of pain. But instead, it was just me and Francie, motherless mothers trying to survive, trying to save each other over and over. Francie was trying to save me again now. She wanted me under her careful eye so she could monitor me, mother me, patronize me. But if I'd learned anything about my sister, anything about motherhood, it was that Mia would come first. Francie's instinct to protect her own children and by extension my child would ultimately trump her love for me. I was also a mother now. Mia was mine, and I loved her more than the world. But I was hazy. The medication, the goddamned medication, left me in a fog. It disconnected me from everything. Love, anger, pain, strength. Right now my love for Mia was in my head. I understood it. I felt it, and I abided by it. But it wasn't the bone-deep love that I knew was there just below the surface, beneath the cloudy layer of drugs. Without that closeness, without that raw and naked love, I couldn't protect Mia. The drugs made me docile, and I couldn't afford to be docile if I was going to keep my child. I didn't need to go off them completely, just miss a day or two, just skip enough that I felt the burning love for Mia right below the surface of my skin where I knew it pulsed. I just needed to feel the throb of that love enough to fight for her, enough to stand up to Francie and Mark, to be the mother I knew I could be. It was my only choice. Francie. The cars on the bridge flew past us with a speed that was disconcerting. Though a thick metal rail separated the footpath from the traffic, I couldn't help but clutch Anna and Autumn's hands. Below us, the blue-black water of the Pacific frothed in icy waves, tiny surfers bobbing toward shore. Up here, atop the sunset-colored bridge, the wind was fierce and loud. Mark was several steps ahead, and he turned back periodically to grin at us or to shout something that was quickly eaten up by the wind. I hadn't walked the bridge in many years, though each time I remembered how dramatic an experience it was. It was cold, loud, breathtaking. The girls skipped ahead cheerfully, their hair blowing behind them in sheets, and Mark looked more relaxed than I'd seen him in a long time. Because it was too loud to talk, we just walked. Eventually, Anna joined her father, and Autumn and I followed behind.